While Matt is taking care of that for me, thank you very much. I ask you to take your Bibles and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. We're going to begin by reading the last couple of verses of this text and then the first verse of chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, beginning in verse 9, the preacher says this. He says, "Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood. And follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. So remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, 'I have no delight in them.'" This is, as we draw this study to a close, especially as we've been considering young people this morning, these are admonitions given to the young, but might I suggest that the bottom line is that each of us need to remember these things. And one of the things we need to remember is the fact that God has given us our hearts. He has given us our minds to make decisions and choices in our lives. And the text that we have behind me on the screen talks about how our heart pushes us and how it motivates us, how it gives us direction. In Ecclesiastes chapter 10 and verses 2 and 3, chapter 10 and verses 2 and 3, this is what the preacher says concerning the heart. "That a wise man's heart directs him toward the right, but the foolish man's heart directs him toward the left. Even when the fool walks along the road, his sense is lacking, and he demonstrates to everyone that he is a fool." One of the bottom lines that we'll talk about in the assembly hour is the fact that we get to make, and once we, when we talk about last night, is we get to make decisions, right? We get to influence how it is that we live this life. And as we talk about the bottom line, we're going to talk about some things that we just need to keep in mind always. And we recognize, as we've discussed in other times, that there are realities, there are facts of life that we need to accept and that we need to be willing to allow to shape the way that we live this life. One of those things that we have discussed in brief is the fact that we get to make choices. We get to make choices in this life. Each and every day, we are faced with innumerable choices. I mean, the first one we probably face every single day is whenever that alarm clock goes off. We get to choose whether we hit snooze or whether we actually drag ourselves out of bed. Anybody hit snooze this morning? I did about 3 or 4 times, I'll have to admit. We have choices. But what God expects of us is to make the right choice. He expects for us to do the right thing. What I want to talk about in this time together, this study, and I very much welcome any interaction that you would be willing to give, I want to just consider doing the right thing and what can help us to do the right thing in every situation. I know that is very general. That's a very broad thing to say, just do the right thing. We don't really have much time to get into great specifics about maybe different situations and the choices we have and what the right thing to do is. But in the course of this study this weekend, I've really emphasized the idea of seeking godly wisdom. And for the young people especially, who can remember what we discussed is a good definition for what wisdom is. Do you guys remember? Hey, we said it was knowledge. It starts with knowledge. Wisdom begins with knowledge. But we asked the question yesterday in one of our sessions, is obtaining knowledge all that matters? Let me ask that to everyone here. Is obtaining knowledge all that matters in this life? Now, if it is no, then can we expound upon why that is so? Absolutely. Were you here yesterday? You sneak in the back somewhere? That's exactly right. This life is not just about obtaining knowledge. It's not just about coming to possess it within our minds. But wisdom is taking knowledge and applying it to the situation. It's taking knowledge and putting it into action in whatever circumstance, whatever reality it is that we find ourselves in. And if we conclude that life is all about choices, if we are constantly faced with the choice that we can either go, I guess this would be your left, or to the right, or maybe we say straight, maybe we go backwards, what God expects for us is to take the knowledge that we have gained through the many ways that we gain knowledge, whether it be through reading of the Word, maybe it's discussion with another individual, maybe experiential knowledge. He expects us to take that knowledge and then to put it into practice, to apply it to the situations that we find ourselves in. That's how we do the right thing. Let's talk about that just a little bit more, though. Let's talk about that a little bit more. We're talking about having wisdom. What is mentioned in verse 1 that helps the man to go in the right direction? What do you see there? In verse 2. Ecclesiastes chapter 10 and verse 2. What helps the man to go in the right direction? A wise heart. Can I suggest to you that a wise heart must be developed and protected at all costs. If we are a people who understand the necessity to do the right thing, then every situation we need to try to make the right decision and make the godly decision and go the way that we ought to go, then that begins with understanding our need to develop a heart that possesses the wisdom to make the right decisions. That's really what we see in those first three verses. In Ecclesiastes chapter 10, beginning in verse 1, dead flies make a perfumer's oil stink. So a little foolishness is weightier than wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart directs him toward the right, but the foolish man's heart directs him toward the left. Even when the fool walks along the road, his sense is lacking, and he demonstrates to all that he is a fool. Whenever it comes to people understanding who we are as individuals, at the very foundational level of our individuality, how can someone come to determine what kind of person I am? By your fruit, okay? What all is involved in fruit? I just give them some good produce, right? Maybe some nice shiny apples, some nice plump oranges, a juicy watermelon. Whenever Jesus talks about fruit, that's what He's always referring to, right? He uses that language to help us to understand a little better. He says, the fruit, let's see what you said. You said words, actions, and what else? Words, actions, and deeds. What we see externally is most often a byproduct of who we are internally. Now, is that a hard, fast rule? Why not? Why would we say that is not an absolute? Yeah, an evil man can do good deeds, right? An evil man can do good deeds. An evil man can recognize that he is benefited by occasionally doing that which is good. That through doing that which is good, he can gain some praise. He can gain some recognition. Maybe he can take a step up the ladder in some sort of way. So it isn't necessarily always just what we do, right? Would we agree with that? Whenever it comes to determining who we are as an individual, maybe whenever it comes to judging ourselves, it's not always just about what we do externally. Maybe more importantly, it matters not about the external portion of ourselves, but what matters more. It matters what's inside, right? It matters what's inside. It matters who we are at the very foundational level of our beings, to our very soul, our heart. Whenever I consider myself, and I'm examining myself, as Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians chapter 13, examine yourself, test yourself to see whether you're in the faith. Whenever I take those times of introspection and self-examination, I can't just look at those things and think, okay, Nick, well, what do you do? Sure, that has something to do with it, right? It matters what I do externally. But where does my examination need to begin? It needs to begin internally, right? It needs to begin internally. Can we talk about why that's so? Can we turn to Proverbs real fast? Proverbs 4. Proverbs 4 and verse 23. Preachers in the room, you want a cool little outline that you can preach from Proverbs? Here it is for you right here. Proverbs 4, 23 through 27. Talk about the healthy disciple, the healthy, godly person. One of the aspects of the follower of God that greatly affects whether he is healthy or not is what's found in verse 23. Proverbs 4 and verse 23, "Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life." Watch over your heart with all diligence, with great effort, with great attention. Why? For from it flow the springs of life. Now, what's the context of Solomon saying this here in Proverbs? Skip back to verse 20. "My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ears to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to all their body." The context is a plea, is an admonition from Solomon. Remember, the first few chapters of Proverbs are written as a father writing to his son, saying, "Son, this is how I want you to live. This is wisdom. This is applied knowledge so that you will do the right things." And so as I'm sharing this wisdom with you, I hope that you'll actually listen. I hope that you'll incline my ears to what you say. I hope that you won't let them depart from your sight, but keep them right there where? The very first thing says, in your heart. "For they are life to those who find them and health to all the body." We see in the next few verses, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, we see the heart, we see the mouth, we see the eyes, and we see the feet mentioned. But first on the list is what? First is the heart. Because I'll suggest to you that the mouth and the eyes and the feet are controlled by what? The heart. They're controlled by the heart. So therefore, he says to begin with, watch over your heart with all diligence. He doesn't begin with the feet. He doesn't begin with the eyes. He doesn't begin with the mouth. He begins with the heart. For from it, he says, flow the springs of life. It is that pond, that lake in the middle of the forest where the water gathers, and then from there the streams go to the rest of the forest. The rest of the forest is watered. The animals at different portions of the forest are able to find drink. Everything grows from that. It is the central location of who we are as individuals. So if we are determined to make the right decision, if we are determined to be a godly people who make godly decisions, then it begins with developing our hearts. And we know we're not talking about the actual organ. We're not talking about this. But we're talking about the mind. We're talking about, again, who we are to our very soul, who we are to the soul, that we develop our character to be a person that can make the right godly decisions. So, let me ask this. What can we do to do so? What can we do to create a wise heart? I think I saw a hand somewhere. I see a hand. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Michelle. Of course, you go ahead. I'm going to see if I can find some water. For the word of God is living and active, Absolutely. Yeah, we talked yesterday in one of our sessions about the necessity of not just doing what is right, but doing what is right for the right reasons. We were talking about the value of respecting authority and why we ought to do that. But then I flipped it on them and we were talking about the fact that at some point the young folks here will be those who are in positions of authority. I said, what can we do to help people to respect us? They ought to respect us if we're in authority to begin with, but we can help in that relationship. We can help them to respect us more. What can we do in that? And my suggestion was that we not just teach what they need to do or how they need to do it, but we need to teach why it is that they need to do it. And what you just mentioned from Hebrews chapter 4, I think is along those lines, that the Word of God, it isn't just a book that tells us what to do. It's not just an instruction manual that says, you do this and you do that. But it's so much deeper than that. The Word of God is not just about reforming actions and leaving it skin deep, leaving everything on the surface. But the impact of the Word of God is past the skin. It's past the bone. It's past the marrow. And it goes straight to the heart. That's why whenever Jesus taught, He didn't just teach to change actions. No, He taught to change hearts. Because He understands that those who are willing to do the right things, the ones who are really dedicated to doing the right godly thing, they do so because they recognize from their heart that it needs to be done. And that they have a zeal, a burning desire, a burning passion to do the will of God. And so we must begin with the heart. Anybody got any quick suggestions for what we can do then to develop a wise heart? Listen to the source of wisdom. Yeah, listen to the Bible. We have to be active in the Word. We cannot ignore the true source of wisdom and think that we're going to become wise. That is just illogical. That makes no sense. To think that we can ignore wisdom and yet gain wisdom. Please, Matt, yes.
I think also try to be reflective of how idols try to these idols around us provide for our heart.
Yes. Yes.
And
yes. 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 Absolutely. That's the thing. God's not the only one that wants our heart. He's not the only one. There are others who are fighting for souls. There are others who are fighting for influence over us. It is the struggle between good and evil. It's a struggle between God and Satan. Satan's walking out there, is he not? Seeking someone to devour, seeking someone to destroy. We need to make sure that we listen to wisdom. We need to make sure that we guard our hearts then against foolishness. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Can I emphasize there listening to the counsel of wise people? Wise people. Don't listen to the song of fools. We talked about that yesterday. I believe it was from Ecclesiastes 7. That people hate the rebuke of the wise man, but they love the song of fools. We need to reject the song. It might sound pretty. It might make us feel good. But if the source is foolishness, then we ought to have and want no part of it. We need to seek out even the rebuke of the wise man. It'll help us. So these things and many more can help us then to develop within ourselves a wise heart. A heart that can be the source of making wise decisions. Let me offer this up to you as well, though. Not only must a wise heart be developed and protected at all costs, but one of the things about doing the right thing is that we need to do the right thing even if it is a small thing. Do the right thing even if it is a small thing. Because what we see here in Ecclesiastes in chapter 10 and verse 1, the very beginning, talks about a small thing. Ecclesiastes chapter 10 and verse 1, dead flies make a perfumer's oil stink. So at this time, as they were making their fragrances and their oils and their ointments and such, they had them in these large vats and they were allowing them to ferment and do whatever that has to do with making ointments and such. Considering the size of the vats that they would create this in, What does a fly look like to that? In comparison to size? A speck. That's very appropriate, a speck. A 100-gallon vat far overshadows the size of a single small fly. Yet, what we see in this text is that if you get a whole bunch of flies together and they're dead and they find themselves in this vat of oil, they're going to make it stink. Their little bodies are going to break down, they're going to decay, and this ointment, which ought to smell good, you're going to have some fragrance of dead fly. Don't quite know if anybody would like to put that type of cologne or perfume on in the morning. Oh, that smells wonderful. Is that dead fly? That's good. Nobody wants that, right? Nobody wants that. What do we learn? We learn small things matter. The small things matter. My mom stressed that to me for so many years, and I just looked at her like she was crazy. I think an accurate look on my part. But nonetheless, I have learned as I've gotten older that small things matter. Especially in the work of the church, the small details matter. Because if we forget to cross our I's and dot our T's, you end up looking very foolish. Because it might not just be one thing, right? It might just not be one small thing. It might not just be two small things. But whenever small things begin to compound, what do they turn into? Big things, right? That little bitty snowball that you make at the top of the mountain and you begin to roll down the snowy hill. What's the size of it once it gets to the bottom? It's still a little bitty snowball, right? No, it just grows. The more it rolls, the more snow it picks up, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And by the time it gets to the bottom, it's ready to roll someone over. You know, comparatively speaking, maybe to other things, whenever David was standing on top of the roof and he saw Bathsheba, that decision right there in and of itself is a small decision, right? The small decision is I either look away and forget, or I linger and advance. When we say a small decision, yeah, I mean, there's not much thought into it. It's not exactly a complex decision. But the poor decision to linger and then to think upon it and eventually to act upon it turned into a pretty big deal, right? And only led to murder, a child dying, a house of horrors, you might say, for David. But the small things, they matter. The small things add up. The small things often compound and turn into big things. You might think of any examples of that off the top of your head, maybe that you've experienced or that you've seen others do, how a small thing end up leading to huge disastrous effects, or maybe even a good situation came from it, just from a very small decision. How many examples they think of on top of their head? Yes, Matt.
I was reading something about habits and how little things end up kind of dominating our lives. I mentioned smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we don't think that we're going to be controlled by them, but then you get it, and then the first thing you do when you wake up, you maybe check it, and the first thing before you go to bed, you check it throughout the day. And when we look at statistics of how often we look at our phones, and it's such a little thing, but then it compounds to where it's actually changing the way we think and the way things.
Very true. Comparatively speaking, me to my phone, I'm much bigger. The control it has over me at times, though, is pretty great. It's not good. It is a small thing. Small things compound. Any other examples? Yes, ma'am.
Words.
Yes. Our words are very powerful, are they not? Think about the tongue in general from James 3, right? How so small a member of the body the tongue is, yet it holds great power, like the rudder on the boat or the small flame turns to a forest fire. The bit in the horse's mouth, it holds great power. Small thing, great power. Yes, sir.
Habits.
Yeah, small habits. Kind of like Matt was talking about. What other small habits might we have that can have a great impact upon us? Small habits. Yes. That is so nice coming from a guy from Washington, right? He fits well here in Southern hospitality. Now, Curtis is a very kind young man. But it's so true, saying thank you, being polite. Does it take a lot of effort to be polite? Does it take a lot of effort to say thank you? Does it take a lot of effort to hold the door for someone, to say you're welcome? How much effort does it take just to smile, right? It doesn't take... Everybody try right now. Everybody smile right now. I think I saw some frowns. Guys, smiles go up. You show teeth normally. They don't go down. That's okay. That was pretty early still. I get do like I do with the kids this morning. Everybody stand up and do a little game we played. I'm not going to do that, though. Everybody leaves their seat. That would not be good. Chaos would ensue. But little things affect big things. Little right decisions can have a major impact on what we do in this life. So, we need to develop a wise heart, and then we need to protect it. We need to guard it against Satan and what he wants to do in destroying us. We need to remember that sometimes the right things are the small things, but sometimes also the right thing can be done by simply using our brains that God has given us. Sometimes all it takes is for us to use a little common sense, a little sense that has been developed through godly wisdom. What we see in verses 8 through 11, In my margin, I just have written out, use your brain. This is what it says beginning in verse 8. He who digs a pit may fall into it, and a serpent may bite him who breaks through a wall. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them, and he who splits logs may be endangered by them. If the axe is dull and he does not sharpen its edge, then he must exert more strength. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. If the serpent bites before being charmed, there is no profit for the charmer. What I see here are just very practical circumstances that the preacher is saying you find yourself in. And in these circumstances, in these situations, if you will use some wisdom, then he said that you have gained the advantage of hopefully being more successful. You gain the advantage of being successful, which means you often avoid doing some foolish things. Think about the person who digs the pit. Maybe he digs a pit for trash, for whatever it might be. If he forgets where he puts that pit, he probably wouldn't want to end up in the bottom of it, right? We often forget those things that we don't think are important, or we just don't give attention to, again, maybe the small details. We need to pay attention to the small details, pay attention to what it is that we are doing. Or he says someone who may be breaking down a house, think about deconstructing a house, some demolition on a house. You just go in there, you know, guns blazing, just swinging hammers, swinging sledgehammers and such. What happens if you try to demolish a house without putting any thought into how this house needs to come down? If you don't use some common sense, the house might end up coming down on top of you. What he says, the snake might get you because it's on the other side of the wall. Or he who quarries stones might be hurt by them if you're just... And out there breaking stones, just again slinging hammers around haphazardly and such, you're going to get hurt. If you have an axe that you're trying to cut some wood with, and it has a dull blade, yet you have a sharpener right there beside you, but you don't take advantage of the sharpener, you're going to have to work so much harder. Kind of a good biblical example of working smarter, not harder. Just making the right decision. Using some common sense, using some sense that God has given us, just use our brains. Sometimes we just don't do that. God has blessed us with this incredible brain that is so far superior to any sort of supercomputer that we could ever create as mankind. You know, how often do we forget to just use it? We just shut off sometimes. We kind of put the brain to sleep, yet the body keeps going. Let me suggest that's not a very smart thing to do. We need to allow our brains to help us to make good, wise decisions. Those are just three things I saw in chapter 10 that I wanted to point out. But for the remainder of the study, what I want to do is to look at four specific times when we really, really need to be aware of making the right decision, of doing the right thing. Because it's in these times where we might be tempted to not give that much thought or not make the right decision, but maybe just make the easy decision. This is the first one I see. These are all in chapter 11. The first one is this. The first one is we need to do the right thing, maybe if we don't see the results immediately. Even if we don't see the results immediately, we still must be willing to do the right thing. Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 1, "Cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days." You might have any ideas of what this verse is referring to. What is your understanding of casting your bread upon the waters? I'll be honest, the first thing I think of is throwing some bread at some ducks. Sneaky feeling that's not what he's talking about here though. Investment. I think there is some investment here. I agree with that. He might have another word they might say that this has to do with. Yes, ma'am? Being fruitful. And we can be fruitful through good investments. Can we say maybe he's talking about being a little ambitious at times? Being a little ambitious. Let's think for a second. What haunts us often from being ambitious? What stops us from doing that often? Fear. Uncertainty, right? Fear and uncertainty cause us so often to not do the right thing. To not do the ambitious thing. That's one of the things we'll talk about in this next one. I'll go ahead and throw it up there because these kind of go together. Is that we even need to do the right thing whenever we don't know what the future holds, right? You put that together. You might not see the results immediately, but even more so, you might not know if good results are going to come. You just don't know. But what the preacher says here is you need to cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Maybe it is, very practically speaking for us individually, an investment of some sort. Maybe even more practically, it's just the work that we do each day. Anybody here get paid every single day? Does that even happen really? Anybody do that? You might get paid. They literally go to work, and as they're leaving, you get paid. Anybody? One? Anybody else? One person out of a solid 100 plus here. It's not the norm. So for the vast majority of us, whenever we go to work on Monday morning, we don't see the benefits of that right away. We have to wait till Friday afternoon or whatever the pay periods might be. So because we don't see the immediate benefits of that work that we're doing, that means that we ought to just not do it, right? I'm not going anywhere until I see my payment. No, we need to work. We need to work and we need to do good. We need to do the right thing even if we don't immediately see those results. Now think spiritually for me. There's a really easy answer for this. Spiritually speaking, what's a situation where we need to really do the right thing, even if we don't see the immediate result? To obey the Lord is one. I wasn't even thinking about that. That might be an easy answer. Yeah, the right thing might be to obey the gospel. And here's the thing. Are we going to reap the grand benefit of obeying the gospel right then? Like the ultimate goal? I'm talking very ultimate goal? Of course we reap the benefit at the moment of redemption, of salvation, of accessing grace and mercy, becoming a child of God. But there's a goal even beyond that. We're not going to get that right away, the ultimate goal. But we still need to make the right decision at that point. Can we think of another? Very good answer. I appreciate that. Yeah, evangelism, is it not? Evangelism. I'll tell you what, Tim really impresses me. We go anywhere. I mean, I think of this story. We're in Tampa. We are at this hot dog joint, and this man is in line, striking up conversation with random people. Ask them where they go to church in Tampa. And he's saying, oh, well, we're here for lectures at Florida College, and we have some friends. Starts naming off all these churches that they go to. You ought to go check some of those churches out. Is him ever going to see the benefit from that? Probably not. Yeah, he casts the bread upon the waters. That really impresses me about Tim. Puts me to shame, honestly, in that regard. But that's what he does. He's ambitious. He does the right thing in the moment, even though more than likely he will never see the results. So even if we don't see the immediate results, we still need to cast the bread. Because here's the thing. What are we going to reap if we never sow? Nothing. That's what got the one talent man in trouble, isn't it? He didn't reap anything. He didn't sow anything. He didn't reap anything. He didn't lose anything. But that still wasn't what God expected. So when you do the right thing, even if the immediate results, or even if the results are not immediately seen, we also need to do the right thing regardless of not knowing what the future holds. Again, that uncertainty, that doubt so often can cripple us. It can cripple us. I just don't know. I don't know if this is the right decision, or I just don't know exactly what the outcome of this is going to be. I don't know this. I don't know that. What we talk about Ecclesiastes, there's a lot of things we just don't know. There's a lot of things we're just not going to know. But what in our faiths can help us to combat the uncertainty of life? What can help us with that? Combating uncertainty. What specifically in our faith, though? What specifically in our faith helps us to combat doubt and uncertainty? Prayer. Yes. Yes. Which is what? God is. That's our uncertainty can be helped by knowing what is certain. And what is certain is the fact that we can trust in God, right? Would you turn me to Philippians chapter 4 real quick, just for a moment. See what time we get done. All right, 5 minutes. Thank you. Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 4. Rejoice. Philippians 4 and verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Be anxious for nothing. Be anxious for nothing. Don't worry about uncertainty. Don't worry about doubt. But in everything by what? Prayer. By everything by prayer and supplication. With thanksgiving in your heart, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts. You need to protect the heart, right? Will guard your heart and mind in Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, lovely, good repute, excellent, if there's any excellence, if anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things and the things you have learned and received and heard and seen in me. Practice these things. Make the right decisions. Do the right thing. And the God of peace will be with you all throughout this text. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. What is that? 6 verses. What we see emphasized is a peace that can be obtained. A peace in a life where things are not peaceful. In a life where things are not peaceful, in a life where things are uncertain, in a life where Satan is trying to fill our hearts with doubt, Paul here says, you can have peace. You can have that peace. You can have some surety in insecurity. You can have some confidence in a time of doubt. Why? Not because this world is predictable. Not because others will always be dependable. But because your God is dependable. His peace will give you peace. So even in a situation where we don't know what the future holds, we can still know that we can do the right thing. Because we know if it has to do with God. If it's God's wisdom, then it is the right thing. And He will carry us through no matter what the situation holds. So we need to do the right thing, even if we don't see the results immediately, even if we don't know what the future holds. Let me suggest to you as well, I'm just going to put both these points up to finish up. We need to do the right thing when we're blessed or when we're troubled. And then we also, coming back to you young people, need to do the right thing in our younger years. Let's put these together just for a second. For people of all ages, there are seasons in life, are there not? We talked about this from the book of Ecclesiastes as well. There are seasons in life. There are going to be times whenever we're very high and things are going very well. There are going to be times where we're very low and we see nothing but trouble and storms. And then there's the time where we're in, where we're normally at, which is somewhere in the middle, right? At either extreme, there's a temptation that faces us. Whenever things are going extremely well, the temptation is to fall into the mindset of Laodicea from Revelation chapter 3, right? Where they said that I am fed, everything's good, everything's great, I am in need of nothing. Therefore, they grow lukewarm. We grow lukewarm and we don't seek God as we ought to. So whenever we're being extremely blessed, whenever we're in a time of a great fortune, there's a temptation to become lukewarm and not seek God as we ought to be, even though He's the one that got us that situation to begin with. But then on the opposite extreme, there's the time whenever we're being greatly troubled by Satan that we might just give up. God has abandoned me. God is not protecting me. God is not doing as He said that He would do. I don't feel as if, as what Paul says in Romans 8, that I'm actually in the hand of God and that nothing can touch me. I feel like I'm getting touched by everything right now. The temptation then is to give up. But even in those situations, whether we're high or whether we're low, we must remember we still need to do the right thing in that situation. Whenever we're being blessed, we still need to humble ourselves and be gracious to God and acknowledge that He's the giver of every good thing. Whenever we're being tempted and tried and troubled and tormented, we especially need to do the right thing and lean upon God right then. Because God never promised that He would deliver us from troubles, from temptations. He never said those things would not be present in this life. What He said is He would deliver us from them. That He would give us the way of escape from them. That we could overcome them. So even in those situations, we do the right thing. Young people, right now is the time to do the right thing because your decisions right now, even the small ones, can have a lasting effect on what you're doing in the future. Because right now is the time for you to be developing the foundation of your faith. Right now is the time for you to be laying out the wood to establish the foundation, and you need to start pouring the concrete right now. You need to be setting the foundation right now. Because right now is whenever it's the easiest. Because you're able to be shaped the best. You're able to be molded the best into what God expects for you to be. Parents, we need to remember that. We need to remember that. At the youngest of ages, we need to be shaping our children into children of God. God has given us these children. And He expects us to help them to become His children. Psalm 127, that our children are a gift of God. And every gift that God gives us, we are to use well. And no better way can we do a service to our kids than to lead them to be a child of God. Thank you guys so much for your good comments, for good discussion. I appreciate it very much.